My guest is a household name for millions of Catholics and non-Catholics. Father James Martin is editor-at-large of America Magazine, the Jesuit Review of Faith and Culture. He's also an influential moral voice for the inclusion of LGBTQI Catholics in the full life of the Church, and a hero to many, including me. A papally appointed consultant to the Vatican, Father Martin is author of numerous books, including Jesus, A Pilgrimage, Learning to Pray, and Building a Bridge, How the Catholic Church and the LGBT Community Can Enter into a Relationship of Respect, Compassion, and Sensitivity. Father Martin, welcome back to State of Belief.
Thanks, Paul, and it's great to be with one of my favorite people. And of course, you know you can call me Jim.
Thank you so much, Jim. So at this time of year, there's a lot of people doing New Year's resolutions, but I think sometimes we don't have a chance to really reflect on where we are in our life. And I wonder, how do you treat this time of year that, you know, after Christmas, but before the New Year's? And how do we understand the opportunity of reflection, like deep reflection, from your vantage point as someone who really has investigated the power of spirituality?
Well, I think it's a natural time for people to take stock. I think Christmas, you're slowing down in terms of, at least in the northeast part of the United States, it gets colder. It's more kind of interior. You're inside more time to pray, I think. And I don't think that New Year's resolutions are such a bad thing. People tend to turn their noses up at them, but I think it's actually a good thing to take stock. You know, in the Jesuits, we have a tradition, you know, called the examination of conscience, where you look over the day and you see where God has been. And one of the things I'd like to recommend to people is to do that for the year, to kind of look back and see where has God been in my year, because we tend to just, you know, we're all busy people and we tend to go on to the next thing. And we don't pause and look back. And I think it's really in looking back that we can see God more clearly. So I think it's a good time to take stock. I like this time of year. I tend to tell people, Paul, you may have heard me say this, I don't like Christmas very much, all the craziness around it, but I do like the Feast of the Nativity, right? I love the readings. I love Advent. I love, all the beautiful, the gospel passages, but Christmas and shopping and all that I can kind of leave behind.
Right. Actually, the season of Advent has long been my favorite, when I actually take time to appreciate this idea of openness and expectation and what might come. Mm-hmm. And I think that, part of your work you've been investigating the spiritual tools that are available to us that, you know, are for Catholics, but then also your work has transcended that. There's so many people who find your work on, I think it's underappreciated, but your work on humor and the role that levity can have in thinking about like where we are as a community. I'd love for you to like, that is something anybody who gets a chance to talk to you knows immediately. Like this is a part of what you view as fully being you. So how does humor factor into it, and how can we employ that in our lives?
Well, sure. I wrote a book called Between Heaven and Mirth, which looked at the place of joy, humor, and laughter in the spiritual life. And, you know, in Jewish scriptures, in the Gospels, and one of the things I think that it's important to remember is that Jesus had a sense of humor. And we tend to forget that because we've heard the story so many times. You know, humor is bound to a particular time and place, and so we may not get the humor of first century Judea or Galilee. But there's some funny stories in the Gospels. One quick one I like to say is when Jesus, talks about the Pharisees who strain out a gnat and swallow a camel. We say, oh, that's kind of an interesting image. But in Aramaic, it's a little word play. The words are galma and gamla. And so he's making a little joke. He's making a little pun. And when you translate it back, you say, oh, he's kind of making a little play on words. It's funny. And yet we don't think of Jesus as funny. We don't think of the saints as funny. Oftentimes they were extremely funny. And I think that that translates into people thinking that to be Christian and to be religious is to be deadly serious all the time, you know. But as a friend of mine liked to say, if you're deadly serious, you're probably seriously dead too. So I think it's just part of it. Look, you know, the other thing is we say we all believe, Christians believe Jesus was fully human and fully divine. Fully human means having a sense of humor.
Right. I mean,
so we have to remember that.
Yeah.
It's kind of threatening. Yeah. It threatens some people when you say that.
How are you feeling about, you know, yourself and what you're thinking about for this next year? Like, do you have anything, like, when you think about New Year's resolutions or like where you want to go from here? Is there something that, you know, even as someone as evolved, of course, as you are mm-hmm. spiritually, mm-hmm. what are you thinking about going forward?
Well, you know, there's stuff that's going on in my ministry. So, for example, I'm finishing up a book on Lazarus that's coming out. I'm working on, I should tell your listeners, a website that's called outreach.faith, which is a website for LGBTQ Catholics, and we have lots of stuff coming up there. You know, it's funny, Paul, I tend to think of the same thing every year, and also, you know, at Lent, which is just being kinder. And, you know, it's not like I'm this evil person, but I really do think that 90% of the Christian life, of the spiritual life, is being kind to people. And, you know, not saying snotty things and being generous and giving people your time. And so I try to each New Year's to try to be kind in the coming year. You know, I fail, as we all do, but that's always my resolution. And that's always my Lenten sacrifice, as it were.
Well, I'm going to keep you to that because you're often very unkind to me. No,
I constantly.
No, I actually think that's really great because, you know, it's very simple. Mm-hmm. But kindness also can radiate out because mm-hmm. once you actually are determined to be kind to the people around you, it includes a lot of people who aren't like you. It includes mm-hmm. involving yourself a little bit more in a community that's around you, which can lead you into some really important direction. So I think that's really beautiful.
Yeah, and it's not just, I mean, as you know, it's not just being nice, which is important right. too, but it's also being charitable and generous. You know, it's funny, I was asked to write something on what's called an Ignatian hero, like a Jesuit hero, and I picked this fellow, you probably know the name, Daniel Harrington, a great scripture scholar who taught me New Testament. And the reason I picked him was because he's probably one of the kindest people I've ever known. I mean, never a bad word out of his mouth, kind to people, never being sarcastic. And you know, I'm when I'm in the presence of people like that, and I'm sure you know them, Paul, people who are just kind people, it really is, it's a kind of challenge. And you think, boy, this person really is living the spiritual life, you know, you know, better than I am, right, as a Catholic priest.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love that, and I think it's an under-mentioned value and virtue, but I think it's great. Let's talk a little bit about this past year, which, you know, you mentioned outreach. I really want to hear about that, but, you know, you have been really involved in some groundbreaking work on being, you know, a voice for people in the church who really haven't had much of a voice, which is, you know, LGBTQ people mm-hmm. who really want to maintain their connection with the Catholic Church, but mm-hmm. have really found it to be an adverse situation. Mm-hmm. Adverse. Tell me about that work and what you've done this year, what you're learning, and what you're planning going forward.
Oh, those are great questions. Well, the big thing was we started this website called outreach.faith, which has news and essays and resources, a whole sort of resource library for LGBTQ Catholics worldwide in different languages. We had a conference at Fordham University in New York with about 250 people, and it's just blossomed. I never really thought I'd be running a website or running these conferences, but here I am doing it, and I feel like it's God's work kind of bringing me into it. What have I learned? One of the things I've learned is how many different groups there are all over the world that I had no idea about. I was in Rome a couple of weeks ago for a visit at the Vatican, and I gave my first in-person conference, you know, because of COVID, in 2 years. And it was in Rome. It was translated. My Italian's not that great. And all these people were coming up. I'm from this group in Milan. I'm from this group in Rome. I had no idea these groups existed. And so, and particularly in Europe, there are a lot of sort of smaller groups for LGBTQ Catholics. And that was kind of exciting. And, you know, where this is going, it's kind of up to God. It just keeps growing and growing. And we'll see.
Yeah, I think that the idea that, you know, it's about building coalitions, recognizing that people are going to do different kinds of things in different contexts, and being open to learning from different, you know, people who are initiating. I'm sure that's very, very exciting. So Tell us a little bit. You've referenced it a couple times, you know, visiting the Vatican. I assume that means being with Pope Francis. And, you know, this has been, I remember, you know, back in the days when I was at HuffPost and we were talk about, you know, I remember like when Pope Francis was, I guess, elevated to the position, and it just being like, you know, this kind of really, you know, beginning to understand this person. What have you learned about the person who is Pope Francis over your interactions with him?
Well, I've only had really two long meetings with him, the most recent a month ago. First of all, he's a really nice guy. He's very kind, to use the word we were saying. He's also quite funny. Some jokes I can't repeat. I'll tell you afterwards, after we get off the air. But
oh, come on. That's true.
One thing I will tell you, actually. So I am a member of what's called the Dicastery for Communications, a consultor, which is the communications department of the Vatican. So we have these meetings every 2 years. I flew over for this meeting. I was very happy to go. And they have a general audience with this group, the Pope does, okay? But the day before, I met with him privately, and I can say this, to talk about LGBTQ Catholics. And he was very warm and open, and we had a great conversation and, you know, very supportive. Anyway, the next day was the general meeting for the whole group, right? So there were like 200 people there. The Pope comes in. This is very funny. This part I can say. It's all public. The Pope comes in, and he literally has an 8-page speech, and he says in Italian, my Italian's okay, who wants to read this 8-page talk? No one wants to hear this. I'll give it to my assistant. You can read it online. Let's talk a little bit more informally about communications. So he starts off, and he's very animated, and he's, you know, I don't know how good your Italian is, but I hear like, oh, comunicazione personale and all this kind of stuff, ecclesia, blah, 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 chiesa. And then I hear him say, ah, Vedo, I see, Vedo James Martin. And I
like, oh, you're like,
right. And then he starts talking, blah, 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 in Italian, James Martin. And I could tell the body language of people around me wasn't like ribbing me. They were very still. And I thought, oh my gosh, what is he saying? So he stops to talk and everybody says, oh, he was telling everyone that he thought you were a good communicator because it was about communications and you help people communicate with God and get this, and that they should all read your book, Learning to Pray. Okay.
Wow.
So get this. So here's the funny part. So I go up to him. Now I speak a little more Spanish and he knows that. I go up to him. Everyone is supposed to go up and then shake his hand. Now I had seen him the day before. I go up to him and he says in Spanish, I told everyone to buy your book. I hope you're happy.
Wow.
Gracias, Santo Padre. No, so he's really funny. He's a funny guy warm and wonderful and very supportive of the work I'm doing.
Isn't that amazing, though?
At great expense to him, too.
Yeah, that must feel great because you come under a lot of fire.
I do.
I mean, people protesting your events, people online, it's vicious. This is actually kind of a spiritual lesson for all of us.
Sure.
Like, how do you deal with incoming like that? Like where you are, you know, it's not a question of like whether or not your cause is just and whether or not you're like helping people, because of course you are. But then all of this vitriol, like, you know, what's one of the ways spiritually that you counteract that negativity in your life?
Well, I'll tell you, and there's a lot. And when we first met, I wasn't having any of this. This is just recent, the last, you know, 5 or 6 years. So it's new for me to have people really hate me and call me names and, you know, including sometimes bishops and other priests. So one of the things is I go back to the passage called the rejection at Nazareth in the Gospels where Jesus is rejected. And I was on a retreat praying about this, and I imagined myself talking to Jesus, as we do as Jesuits. And I said to Jesus, well, how could you stand up in the synagogue, which is where he was, and say these things, which is essentially declaring himself as the Messiah, knowing that people would reject you? They end up chasing him out of the town and almost throw him off the brow of a hill. And the words I heard in prayer, not physically heard, Jesus saying was, must everyone like you? And I think that the invitation was to let go of the need for people to love, like, and approve of me. Everyone. Because everyone can't like you. And when you're sort of wedded to that, right, you really get sort of, you know, you're kind of bound by that. That's the first thing. The second thing is knowing that I do have the support of the Pope, of my Jesuit superiors, my Jesuit brothers. That really helps me to know that. And I'm also very careful about what I say. And then the third thing is to say, you know, look, I mean, as a Christian, Jesus promises us this. I mean, if you're going to stand up for people on the margins, right, he says, look, kind of expect it. So those things put it in perspective. But really, it's the first thing, just saying that, look, everyone's not going to like me or approve of me. I do my best. I try to be faithful to church teaching and not challenge it. But also, I try to raise up these people who are really marginalized. And if they don't like me, they don't like me. So truly, it doesn't bother me as much. I mean, it bothers me a little bit, but it's not like I'm losing sleep over it. And I also know that I can't answer every crazy critique, right? You know, I just can't. So I have to. It's basically some freedom and detachment.
I think that that's really, all of that is so wise. And to recognize that, you know, which voices do you want to listen to?
Right.
You want to listen to the young, you know, the young person who is, you know, feels so much hate
right.
towards them, and you're that person who has given them hope, mm-hmm. and they say thank you to you. Are you going to hear that voice,
exactly.
or are you going to hear the random person who you don't know, who like hates you for a stereotype of, you know, or whatever reason? I just think I love that. And I love the idea of Jesus coming up with, does everyone have to like you? It's actually very freeing and important.
I'll never forget that on retreat. You know, I really heard that very strongly. But the other thing is, you know very well, Paul, that the voices that are the strongest are often people who are dealing with their own sexuality, who are right. uncomfortable with their own selves. That's usually, for me, been a real kind of tell, as they say, in gambling, that this is someone who's, you know, if they're like obsessed with this, something's going on. And I often have a lot of people, when I do a little research, the people that seem to hate me the most are either ex-gays, former gays, or people who you think, boy, something's going on there. So
yeah,
there's a little
yeah.
compassion that needs to be sort of directed towards them too.
And nice for you to be compassionate.
Well, I try.
Because, you know, there are some moments when I'm like, oh, okay, so you're coming for us? All right.
Well, let me tell you something. I know we're running out of little time, but I've been surprised at this doesn't happen often, but occasionally I will get Facebook messages from people, particularly young men, who say, hey, Father Jim, I'm really sorry. 5 years ago, I said these terrible things about you online and was really opposed to you. I've just recently come out.
Yeah.
And I want to apologize.
Right.
And so,
right.
you know, there's that
right.
path too.
Right. So just in closing, like what, I wonder if you'd offer some kind of prayer or, you know, some sort of spiritual offering as far as for all of us who are going into a new year with some uncertainty and imagining a future. Maybe you can offer us a prayer of hope or some offering right now.
Yeah, so let's just ask God to be with us as we think about the year that has passed, and maybe ask God to allow us to see the places where God has been in our lives. We might look back and ask God for that insight to see where God has been, to see where we might have turned away from God and missed God's invitations, and really to commit ourselves this year to being open and attentive and awake to God's presence. Amen.
Thank you. And do you have a New Year's Eve ritual that you do?
Yes, my New Year's Eve ritual is to go to bed early.
What
you know,
a
it's funny.
New Yorker.
We always say I would say also for a celibate male, they always say the two most difficult days of the year are New Year's Eve and Valentine's Day.
that's
because,
poignant.
Well, yeah, for Valentine's Day. But at New Year's Eve, everyone's like, oh, you know, kiss me. And, you know, I can kiss my family and stuff like that. But it is, you know, for a lot of people, not everybody, it's kind of a couple's thing. And also, you know, as a priest, you can't be going out and, you know, like partying all the time. So plus I'm getting old and I don't like staying up till midnight.
Oh my God. I completely join you there. Like, you know, you try to stay up and then it's like, okay, it's New Year's somewhere. Can we go to bed? Right, anyway, exactly. Father James Martin is a Jesuit priest, a prolific author and editor at large at American Magazine. Jim, Happy New Year. Thanks for being with us on State of Belief Radio. And thanks for being such a friend to me over the years.
You know, I was going to say the exact same thing. Thank you. And Paul, you know, thank you for your friendship, your support, your wisdom, your encouragement. You're challenging sometimes. You're such a good friend, and I really am very grateful. I don't want to get too mushy on the air, but thank you. And it's great to be with all of you.